This IBA podcast examines the corruption and doping scandals affecting the world's largest sporting bodies and the challenges of governing this multi-billion dollar industry. Our contributors are Professor Mark Peat, former chair of FIFA's Independent Governance Committee, Michael Beloff QC, chair of the IAAF's Ethics Board, and Professor Richard McLaren, who co-authored WADA's independent report on allegations of widespread doping in Russian athletics. I'm speaking to Mark Peat.
Basically, all major sports governing bodies have huge governance problems and corruption scandals, not only corruption scandals, but also doping, match fixing, and other things. It actually demonstrates to us that FIFA was only an example. We need to really develop much broader perspectives for them all. One thing would be, I think the home and host states of these bodies do have a responsibility. They have to come up with a minimal standard for all these organizations. You know, there are many of them who fly under the radar.
And when you were chairman of FIFA's Independent Governance Committee, what were the major challenges you faced in supervising the football body's reform?
We basically started off saying FIFA is at the same time a multinational enterprise, and it is a quasi-international organization comparable to a specialized organization of the UN. So basically, if you apply the rules that you would apply to a company, a very large company, and the rules on accountability and democracy and transparency that we are expecting from an intergovernmental organization, you can come up with a list of maybe 20 points. We did that very rapidly, and it was interesting to see that they're pretty much the same points that, for instance, Transparency International had come up with. The problem was how to convince them to actually change themselves. They're being self-governed. And there you had, let's say, the old guys who were afraid of losing their job, and they've all lost their job now. They've been either fired or they've now got criminal cases running against them. You have a second segment of people who were opposing basically the European Confederation for political reasons. After we had managed to introduce an independent ethics committee, an independent audit board, and so on, we got stuck with the other recommendations, because especially UEFA said, we will use our 50-something votes to block you. We can block the decision in Congress where you need 3/4 of the votes to change the statutes. We will block it on terms of office, on integrity tests. Only after the US Attorney General and the Swiss Attorney General stepped in, they suddenly caved in, and now everything that we ever suggested has actually gone through, but in a very, very difficult process. For me, it's interesting that they immediately, as soon as the new people came to power, they immediately understood what had happened, and they immediately dismantled the centerpiece of the reform. Mm-hmm. So whatever they say about reform, it sounds hollow.
I'm sure you've seen the John Ruggie reports, which recommended 25, I think, overall, and 6 minor recommendations for how FIFA can better manage human rights risks across its operations. How significant do you think this report is for FIFA?
He is tough in one point by suggesting, well, if, for instance, Qatar doesn't understand about labor laws and so on, FIFA should still think of stripping them of the World Cup. So there needs to be some kind of implementation. He indicates there has to be, we can't just tell them what to do. One also should consider what to do if they don't, if it's not translated into practice.
I'm here with Michael Beloff. He was appointed as chair of the IAAF's Ethics Board in February 2014.
Sport is, I think, the 20th largest industry in the world. And it's always been my impression, ever since I started in sports law, that actually the sport has outgrown its governance. It doesn't have, with a few exceptions, the kind of persons with, you know, financial, political, social skills, really, to administer a major organisation. But again, I mean, that's now being changed. I think that's been appreciated as being a failing. A lot, of course, of what we do is necessarily private, but at least two matters have featured in the public's attention. The first, of course, was what we call the Shobakova case, in which the son of the former president of the IAAF, Diak, and high-ranking Russian athletic officials were allegedly involved, and we found were actually involved, in a conspiracy to extort money from a well-known female marathoner in order to conceal her doping violations and enable her to continue to make a great deal of money on the international marathon circuit. And the second, we've suspended high-ranking Kenyan officials who are alleged to be guilty of not dissimilar activities as well as other corrupt practices. I should emphasize, as far as that's concerned, that's merely an interim suspension. No final adjudication has been reached. But there's a whole series of other matters that are continuing to be investigated. We simply do not have the powers that public authorities have. We cannot search, we cannot seize, we cannot survey, we cannot subpoena witnesses, we cannot access bank accounts and things like that. And we can't even behave like journalists have behaved, that's to say, involving themselves in entrapment, which is a perfectly legitimate way of proceeding, but not one that's open to a board that's called an ethics board. So we very much have to rely upon cooperation and, importantly, of course, upon whistleblowers. I mean, this is really where I think the development of the law, developing processes to protect anonymity, even perhaps in future, like they have in, you know, the FBI, giving people safe houses and new identities and so on. I mean, it seems a sort of macabre world, but that's the direction in which I fear we may have to go if we're able to root out a culture of this kind. We are not independent in the sense that we are a wholly external body, and we continue, of course, to be funded by the IAF because there's no alternative source of funds, and we continue to be appointed by the IAF. We're independent in this sense that if the actions we take, we do not receive guidance, still less dictation, from the IAF or indeed any other body at all. That's point one. And point two, however high up the hierarchy the allegation may relate to, we will fearlessly investigate them.
We've seen really high-level corruption scandals at the IAAF, at FIFA, perhaps at other sporting organisations. What do you think this has taught us about how we should be reforming international sports governing bodies?
One of the things that has been done is to set a term limit for the president. Another that has been done is to divorce the policy-making entity of FIFA from the operational entity. Now, the first of these does result in, it diminishes the opportunity in any organisation for breeding, as it were, well, not necessarily a culture of corruption, but just, it's all the king's men.
I spoke to Professor Richard McLaren, a sports arbitrator and investigator, who's appointed to WADA's independent commission to investigate serious allegations of widespread doping in Russian athletics. What would you say are the most striking aspects of the independent commission's investigation for WADA and the two reports that you produced?
First, the extent of the state involvement in Russian athletics and the doping control system for the entire country, not just with respect to athletics, I found that to be exceedingly surprising, and probably the first time that there was actually evidence. Many people had always thought that there was some sort of systematic arrangement operating, but nobody really had any specific facts and information to be sure that that was the case. And after our report of the Independent Commission for WADA, I think it was very obvious that there was a state operating system. The other major aspect of our work, I think, that was quite surprising was the outcome. And we announced all of our recommendations within the 5 days of the week. It was, the announcement was on a Monday, a press release, and by the Friday of that same week, virtually every one of the recommendations had been either acted on or actions had been taken towards acting on them. And that includes even the Russians at the most senior levels of the sport, including the Minister of Sport. The fact that an independent commission was prepared to go so far as to tell an international federation, the International Association of Athletics Federations, IAAF, that they ought to declare a member of their organization non-compliant with their own doping control rules. And that was a game changer, telling an international federation, one of your members has so misbehaved that you ought to examine what they're doing and declare them non-compliant with your own rules, which they looked into and did do.
Obviously, the first report shone a light, really, on the extent of doping in Russian athletics and the great efforts that have been made to conceal it. But the second report highlighted a number of other countries also under suspicion. Do you think we could see another story as big as the Russian one related to another country?
Yes, that's, I think, quite a strong possibility. That's really outside the scope of anything that the Commission did, but in terms of my own work in the field of sports personally, I would say there's a strong possibility that there are other systems. They may not be so extensive as to be run right from the highest authorities in the country. They may be restricted to a doping control agency that's corrupted and running a corrupt system. There may be different features that don't make it a complete state-run system, but I think other countries have similar types of problems that we discovered with the Commission's work. Money is flowing in at the top levels, but it's also flowing in at the national level and even below that in many, many sports. And I don't think a lot of sports and a lot of international or national federations were ready and had the structures and the personnel to actually handle the flood that was coming into them from all of the money that was being offered to them. And so they have mishandled it, misspent it, and in some cases have been corrupt with respect to it.